Blog Talk Radio.
Show. My name is Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight, this evening?
I can't complain, Mr. Allen. Typical Minnesota winter, temperature below zero, wind chill.
Mm.
This kind of feels like actually January, though obviously it's February. But I understand we have a guest, a state official, if you will, and then we want to take a look tonight at what has become possibly a disastrous lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union and the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP. And we certainly tonight will be examining the completion of the investigation into the death of Jamar Clark on 15 November 2015 here in the city of Minneapolis. So we've got a lot going tonight. The phone lines will be open at some particular point, but if... in the case of Dr. Porter, anyone wants to call, have any questions of his office, we certainly want to entertain that. So why don't you bring our guest in, Mr. Allen, and let's lock in.
Okay. I'd like to welcome tonight to the Ron and Don Show, Dr. Lewis Porter. He is the executive director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, formerly the Council on Black Minnesotans. Welcome, Dr. Porter.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yes, we're glad to have you here. We're broadcasting live through our switchboards at the Apple Studios overlooking downtown, beautiful downtown Minneapolis. And I want to let the callers know, our listeners know, our number is calling number 347-426-3904 if you happen to have a question for Dr. Porter. But can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the council and some of the events that you have coming up here? I know you have a big one coming up here on Saturday, which is the police community relations forum, and it's part of your planning for the legislative agenda. I'm sure. I'm not trying to let all the cats out of the bag. I want to let you tell about it, but why don't you give us a little information about what's going on with that?
I'll be glad to, Don. That is this Saturday, starting at 8:30. We will have a light breakfast, and it will go till noon. And what it is we're trying to get as many voices as possible to come to this forum and give input about police community relations, to look for possible solutions. We're going to have some police officials talking about what's worked in other places. We're going to have people sharing their experiences. And what sets this forum apart is that we are going to be taking recommendations, pulling them together, that will lead to legislation that we hope will be able to make a difference regarding police community relations. That's 8:30 at the Heritage Park Senior Services Center on 4th, and that's going to go until noon, and that's this Saturday. So we're certainly hoping that people will come out and share with us. If you check on our Facebook site, there's a phone number to call and register. And so we just ask that you register so that we'll know how many people to prepare for.
And this is the facility, Dr. Porter, right there on Olson Highway, just about a block down from I-94. You say that's their community center?
No, that's the on Olson Highway is the apartment center, but we're talking about the Oak, the Heritage Senior Services Center, which is on 4th. And let me get you that exact address. Do you have that flyer handy, Don? I believe the address is 1014 4th.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right,
yes.
Then. Now, you said that there will be some law enforcement personnel that will talk in terms of what's worked in other locales. Could you just identify maybe where a couple of these locales where community relations, police community relations, has turned out to be fairly successful? I mean, can you share that with us?
Sure. I know from my own preliminary research that in D.C., they were able to turn the situation around. There were some real problems with police-community relations, and with strategic effort and community input over time, they were able to make a difference. I'm not sure exactly, because we're going to have the president of the Black Police Officers Association, Mr. Hines, as well as we're waiting to hear back from some other current and retired people, in terms retired police officers, as to whether or not they're going to be able to make it. But we know that Mr. Hines will be there, and hopefully some others that will share what's working in other cities, what their research shows, and what they know as officers.
Okay. Now, that's Lieutenant Hines, is that correct?
Correct.
Yes, and what department is he with, St. Paul?
Right, he's with Metro at this time.
He is under the command of former State Senator Harrington, is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh, okay, gotcha, okay, all right.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Mr. Allen, go ahead,
you have some questions.
We were gonna have Mr. Harrington come, but he's not in town, and he recommended Lieutenant Hines, so that's how we got there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Lieutenant Hines spoke on behalf of the reappointment of Chief Janae Harto as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department this afternoon. That's okay. That's why his name kind of rang a bell. All right.
Okay.
Don, go ahead. You got any questions there? Don, are you with us? Well, Dr. Perry,
I am here. I am here. I am so sorry, Mr. Edwards. We had just received a couple of tweets. They're asking some questions. One from MPLS Bad, BADE is the way it's spelled. I think that's, or Bade might be their last name. They said, what is the legislative agenda? What will the legislative agenda look like for this particular event?
Oh, well,
and I guess
share that observation with Dr. Porter. Go ahead, Dr.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy to share that. We're going to focus on those things that in the survey that we did last year prior to my joining the council, those things that came up as priorities. The first one was police community relations, which is why it's going to have its own forum. Then we have another forum later in February that will look at the other issues that include housing, education, human rights, and the expansion of the council to be able to serve more statewide through increased funding. So those are the things that we're going to look at on the 27th, and we're going to ask citizens to come in and tell us how they best think we can go about those things. But the agenda will be based on the research from last year's survey.
Okay, question here, another Twitter person. Oh, he made this big, so he cut it out. What are some of the main messages the legislature and the government need to hear to ensure they understand how these concerns affect African American heritage communities' quality of life?
Oh, I appreciate that. As one of my colleagues said in a planning meeting, Steve Belton said in a planning meeting, this is a really particular moment for us because of the funding and because of the attention that are on things like black disparities around economics and education, because of the attention those things have gotten, and because of the potential funding, that this is crucial. So we really need citizens to come to the forums, and we'll talk some more about those forums, and really need people to take part in the political process, because there's a lot at stake, and there's a potential to make a difference. So we want people to not be passive, but to really be assertive and work with us.
Okay, second question. Let me just get this up here. Sorry about this. Now, are you going to have a follow-up forum in St. Paul for the St. Paul side of the river?
Yes, the one on the 27th will be in St. Paul at the Midway YMCA on University, and that will be the Saturday, the 27th, and it will be from 1 to 5. And that's a new Midway Y facility. And that'll be Saturday, the 27th of February.
Okay, stand by. I think we have a caller with a question. Caller, you're live on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. Lewis Porter? Caller, you're live on the air? Okay, I guess not. Okay, that person.
Let me just ask a question of the good doctor. Now, Dr. Porter, are you the same Louis Porter that was a young reporter for the St. Paul Dispatch a number of years ago?
That's me. I served back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yes, right. Yeah, we talked a couple times way back in the day. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, with that said, I appreciate you taking the time out and being on with us tonight. Is there anything you'd like to say or leave our listeners with? We do broadcast to a large majority out here in the Twin Cities and around the United States and the world, for that matter. Anything you'd like to throw out there?
Yes, I would like to say that a lot of people were aware that the council has a new name and a new executive director, and I really hope that we will work towards collaboration and participation. Those are the two things we're going to be really working for, and as well as some new board members. So we really want to make this a new era for the council, and to bring, one of the things that we want to do is to bring together African-Americans who have been in this country for many, many years and African immigrants who have come here more recently and realize that we face many of the same issues. We have so much in common: the discrimination, the police brutality, the disparities. We have so much in common, so we want to work together to address those issues going forward. So I really appreciate the time and the opportunity to talk about the two forums, one on Saturday in Minneapolis, the one on the 27th in St. Paul, and we just hope that people will come out and let their voices be heard.
All right, we'll definitely have you back. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back on before the one on the 27th and afterward to kind of do a recap of what happened to let our listeners know so we can keep everybody informed of what's happening. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you,
Dr. Louis Porter, Executive Director of the Council for Minnesota's of African Heritage. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Right. You're welcome. Right. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Evers, we are locked and loaded and ready to go.
Well, you know, clearly the prime news story right now is there certainly is a lot of confusion, and of course our phone lines are always open. I have to ask a series of questions as it pertains to yesterday. There was much accolade and et cetera that the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and the NAACP of Minneapolis had filed in Ramsey County District Court a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota, specifically the Department of Public Safety, and more specifically within the Department of Public Safety, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, BCA, who are one of the two entities, one state, one federal, investigating the circumstances surrounding the death of Jamar Clark, a 24-year-old African-American, on the 15th day of November by Minneapolis police. There was much reflection and et cetera on yesterday, press conference, if you will. People indicating that this was showing the toughness of the NAACP, that they were taking care of business. Now, apparently unbeknownst to the NAACP and the American Civil Liberties Union, I'm really shocked because both organizations should have been more on top of the game. They must not have realized that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension had completed its investigation and, in fact, had officially notified the Hennepin County prosecutor, Michael Freeman, that they would be delivering the investigative report and all evidence and materials and et cetera actually late last night. And then information was provided to a reporter at the Minneapolis Star Tribune by the name of David Chenin, who posted on the Star Tribune's website about, I think, 11:30 or something like that this afternoon, that the report was done. Now, it raises a number of questions, Mr. Allen. We talked about it in the production meeting. Number one,
yes,
with the decision by the BCA to complete the investigation, though, you know, no one knows just how complete it was. There is now no standing as it pertains to requiring the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the ECA, to release any videos. Those videos and all materials, as we said just minutes ago, are in the hands now of the prosecutor slash county attorney for Hennepin County. In a copyrighted story in tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, under the heading of David Chenin, the county attorney indicates that he expects to be able to give this matter to a grand jury no later than the end of March, maybe the first week in April, which, you know, that'll be interesting. But in Mr. Chenin's column for tomorrow morning, there was an interesting statement which implied that there was still possibly some additional investigation that had to be done. Now, in the meanwhile, the issue of the lawsuit filed in the Ramsey County District Court is now moot because all materials and et cetera are with the county prosecutor. And I just don't envision any sitting judge who does not want to be reversed trying to force or require the prosecutor in Hennepin County to make anything available until after a formal presentation to a sitting grand jury and a action one way or the other. And so I'm just trying to understand, because I am informed, and I understand my colleague here, Mr. Allen, also has been making inquiries. And Mr. Allen, by the way, is a member of the NAACP. Yeah, you're in good standing. Is that I had wondered at what point Pacific information, detailed information, was given to the national NAACP so that they could authorize the initiation and the collaboration, key word, collaboration, on this lawsuit. I'm told now, Mr. Allen, I understand just in the last hour you have requested Pacific information as well as a copy of the letter of authorization from the National NAACP Board of Directors and its president, Cornell William Brooks, that there is a letter that says that the National Board was authorizing this particular action. I'm just puzzled on how, with all of these legal minds, Mr. Allen, no one paid any attention to the possibility that in the course of preparing the lawsuit that the Pacific party in question, the state of Minnesota, the Department of Public Safety, and the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, would complete their investigation and turn over all their evidence to the Hennepin County prosecutor. Now, by the way, Mr. Allen, on another side, we'll be looking at that a little bit later on. This only is one part of the investigative team. The second part is the federal government, the FBI, and the Department of Justice, who are saying in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper that they have no comment and that the investigation is still going on their end. It's pretty hard to sue the federal government. In fact, by law, you have to get permission. You have to go into federal court present your petition and be authorized to so sue, if you will. Now, are you aware, or were you as an NAACP member and any others who are out there that feel comfortable with giving us a call, were you involved as an NAACP member in reviewing the lawsuit and action to be undertaken by the branch in your name as a member, as well as whatever the membership of the NAACP Minneapolis branch is? I mean, I don't, you know, want to put any individuals on the spot, but I'm just trying to figure out how the national NAACP did not anticipate the particular action, in which, by the way, it's quite clear that Governor Mark Dayton gave the directive to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to wrap up, if you will.
Yes.
And on the same day that the lawsuit was being filed, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and by extension the state of Minnesota were sending the case over to the county attorney. Was
yes,
any
were.
Of this discussed, the possibility of this, Mr. Allen, to the best of your knowledge, inside of the NAACP?
Well, you know, Mr. Edwards, I have not received many emails, and emails are usually forwarded to me that were sent out by the NAACP secretary. And, no, I have not received any letters, any authorizations. And, you know, we went over a couple shows ago, we did go over their bylaws and unit bylaws in detail. And there was no procedure that I am aware of that they followed, nor was there a call to the membership in regards to that particular, you know, decision to move forward on that in the press conference and the formal press release that went out and the suit filed. So I think a lot of the members, and I received a lot of telephone calls from members in good standing of the NAACP, were kind of curious about what was going on and why the unit, the Minneapolis NAACP members, were not notified in regards to.
Now, here's another piece of what has happened that I'm certainly very much aware of as a person who has watched these kinds of cases and et cetera. Everyone now is subject to be subpoenaed. Leadership, membership of the NAACP, Black Lives Matter, all others who have made declarations and statements that they were witness to the death of Mr. Clark, either in person or in person with electronic equipment and et cetera, they're now all subject to being subpoenaed. Do we have any idea, and maybe some of our friends out there can help us, do we have any idea on how many sworn statements slash affidavits were presented by the NAACP and Black Lives Matter that later were turned over to the BCA?
No. I mean, I have no idea, Mr. Edwards. No idea at all. I'm just playing catch-up because I'm actually looking at David Chenin's story that was posted today at 4:40 p.m. titled BCA Completes Inquiry into Jamar Clark's Shooting. And everything you said, you basically, like, you were reading off the story here.
I know it.
Yeah.
You know, it's an item. I'm just trying to figure out how the NAACP will advise witnesses and et cetera. Now, they have retained a law firm. I think it's called Massey in St. Paul. But that no longer has to do with the BCA. And so you have to be talking now about how you deal with a sitting prosecutor, a county attorney. He has awesome power as the chief law enforcement officer of Hennepin County to summon you before a grand jury and to require you to swear under oath to those things that you said that you had knowledge of and et cetera. Failure to do so, you can be jailed. And, in fact, I've seen situations where people have been jailed for as long as the grand jury is seated, or even longer if there's a determination relevant to a petition filed by the prosecutor that the person is withholding information or, more seriously, obstructing justice, if you will. So I'm just wondering, what has been the recommendation from Mr. Jason Soule, who is the chair of the Criminal Justice Committee? Somebody else, I guess, is chair of the Legal Redress Committee. Have you, as an NAACP, or have you been made aware of what the recommendations will be to people who will be called to give testimony under oath in a secret setting? Because you will not be able to come out of that grand jury talking about what you were questioned on, because you will, the next thing you know, you'll be taken before a judge, a sitting magistrate, and you will be held in contempt. So, I mean, are you people in the NAACP, Don, I guess what I'm saying, are you familiarizing people and schooling and educating them on what is now at play?
You know what, Mr. Edwards, we're trying to put the information out there. I mean, we are putting the information out there, myself and also this Mr. Jamar Nelson. And but I don't think they don't understand. They do not understand the seriousness of this, because I've seen a couple posts on Facebook where people said, well, there's folks out there that have videos and we're going to hang on to them, we're going to do this. Well, you know what? You're saying that in public. You know, you could get subpoenaed to cough up them videos, or get, you know, get burnt on the stand for being a liar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, they're playing with some really hot tea right now, and I don't think they understand what the implications are surrounding the situation, how serious the situation is. Now
let
that's
me,
over
let me
with
just read this.
Mr.
I
Mike
just
Freeman.
Received also a text message from a source, an NAACP source, who was saying that as of today, that the president of the NAACP is indicating and taking credit for the case being completed, saying their lawsuit being filed and the case being wrapped up is no coincidence. That seems to me to be a pretty disingenuous statement, because their lawsuit and the case now in the hands of the county attorney are like apple and oranges. So I appreciate the text from the source, if you will, but I'm just not understanding this kind of logic coming from people who are trained as legal practitioners, if you will, who say they are professors of law at one of the most prestigious colleges in the upper Midwest, St. Thomas, and et cetera. So let me just analyze that. So the NAACP is saying that as an outgrowth of their press conference yesterday, the state of Minnesota decided to complete the case. Because that's not the way you complete a case and not the way you wrap it up,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? But
mm-hmm.
let's say that that's all true, that the NAACP created a situation where the case is now in the hands of the county attorney. Then why would you yesterday in the Ramsey County District Court in a lawsuit, the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP of Minneapolis, why would you request an action against the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, who no longer has the material or the evidence?
Exactly.
I mean, are we off base here? Is there some logic to this?
There's no logic as far as I can see. It just doesn't make any sense. Mr. Edwards, we do have a caller on hold.
Let's get the caller in. Let's get the callers in. That the lines are open, and we will be going until 10 o'clock tonight.
Yes. Caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling and your question?
Gentlemen, good evening. This is Jamar.
Hey.
How are you guys tonight?
All right, Brother
hey,
Nelson, how you doing?
Good,
okay.
good. I'm with you on the fact that I'm extremely puzzled. I was wondering if Madam President was worried about the losing the limelight and how that had faded up, so she needed to have something to gin up so that the light could be shined on her again. I mean, this is – you file a lawsuit, you join a lawsuit, and you don't even bother to come up with any monies for the young man's headstone. So I think it's a bit hypocritical to now file a lawsuit when, of course, they should have obviously asked for a special prosecutor from the beginning. But, of course, when a like-minded individual told them to do that, they decided to disrespect that notion. So I find it very odd now that they want to join a lawsuit, not to mention – at our last meeting, there was no mention of any such actions. However, in the full disclosure, I did receive an email today that they had decided to join the ACLU in a lawsuit. But I do find that pretty illogical, too, when we cannot seek outside counsel as NAACP. And again, this is...
Let me correct you, Mr. Nelson. I have to correct you. I was told last night by an NAACP member, I'm not going to stretch anything and et cetera, but who was in contact with the secretary, as was Mr. Allen earlier this evening, who said that there is a letter, and I have to ask you, Mr. Nelson, are you aware of the letter of authorization from the national NAACP to the Minneapolis branch authorizing their participation in the lawsuit?
Not to my knowledge. I have not. Now, if that's attached to the email that the secretary sent out, I will look at some of the attachments that she has sent out along with that. But as of not now, no, I don't.
Is there any reason, sir, I have to vet you, if you will, is there any reason why an African-American organization would not take advantage of the existence of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund, which is a group of excellent lawyers, primarily African-American lawyers, as opposed to using the American Civil Liberties Union, who, and I think the Reverend Jerry McAfee will attest to this, that during the time he was president, that there was a situation in which they attempted to take a look at the imbalance, if you will, discriminatory practices of the arrest of young African-Americans, et cetera. They had a meeting with the ACLU and the Civil Liberties Union was to explore, research, and get back with recommendation for a necessary action. And they never heard any more back from the ACLU. And I'm like you. I'm, you know, why was it that you did not? They did not utilize your branch. Did not utilize the existence of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, one of the finest civil rights legal operation in the United States.
Well, you know, in my humble opinion, I believe that Madam President thinks that she's above the bylaws of the Constitution and does what she sees fit. I mean, obviously, she sees. And know someone in the ACLU that she's in cahoots with. So, look, this is not about Jamar Clark. This is about the NAACP president shining the light on her again. Again, seriously, I think the light had, you know, it was always quiet. There was no cameras around. And now, Madam President decides to gin up a little bit of publicity, and this is how she does. So, it really sickens me that they continue to. Use this young man in vain, his death in vain, in the name of, quote, justice. We can pursue justice in many avenues of it, but I think to use this man's death is sickening and going a bit tiresome.
All right, we need to ask these questions at this particular point, sir, and I'm outside of the NAACP, so it's not any a bias to the extent of any kind of an attack on the leadership. I'm trying to get a feel on when it was, because I know, and we've had you on our program here, and we're very appreciative of that, and you have been very insightful, if you will, knowledgeable about what's going on. But can I ask you, sir, that in the January and December meetings of the NAACP branch and even the November meeting, although I know they were real busy, you know, with the occupation, was there ever a report by the Legal Redress Committee or the Criminal Justice Committee on the affidavits and testimonies that had been taken? Did Jason Soll make a report and indicate the number of citizens that had come forward and such things as that? To the best of your knowledge, sir.
To the best of my knowledge, no. I'll have to, and I'm not home at the current time, but I can vividly remember that through the notes that they were passed at the previous meetings, no, there's been no mention of that at all.
Mr. Allen, how, as journalists, I mean, should we view that there never was a report by the prime committees of the NAACP under the Constitution and bylaws? There was never any report on what had happened to all the people that had come forward and given testimony. I well remember discussions that were held outside of the Elks Rest, which is across the street from where Mr. Clark lost his life, where NAACP president and other NAACP officials were saying they were taking statements and testimony and et cetera and were helping. Folks prepare their statements and et cetera. It would seem to me, gentlemen, that at some point there would have been some kind of report, particularly in December, January. There was no meeting in February because of the storm. It would seem to me that as a part of a rational, you know, operation, that there would have been a update on how many people had gone ahead, had signed their statements, how many had offered to, and this is important, gentlemen, to have accepted custodial control. You see, nobody talks about that, custodial control of the many cell phones and videos that we all were being told about on the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th of November and the days immediately following the tragic death of Mr. Clark. To the best of your knowledge, Mr. Nelson, because you have been to the meetings, Mr. Allen has not, was there ever any discussion about who had custodial control of the videos and the sworn affidavits?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And in fact, Madam President did encourage some of the, you know, alleged witnesses not to come forward anymore, to only give information solely to her. And I guess she would do with it as, you know, she chose. What also is concerned is that, look, the reason the email was sent out is because the secretary was made because there was the concerns were raised by members that we were finding this information out that this lawsuit happened via the media. It wasn't via a vote or a meeting. It was via the media. So thank God that we have members, the diligent members that care about the community and care about that the right things are being done, and that she forced the hand of the secretary to eventually send an email out after we had heard about it via the media. You know, again, there's no transparency in this administration. And, again, you could tell with the way she was speaking at the press conference with her defiant voice and her body language that spoke of anger. You know, we cannot get nothing done when we aren't bridging the gaps, and we continue again to use this young man's death in vain. And then if we truly are trying to obtain justice in this young man's name, let's go about doing things the right way. We have a lawyer leading this organization, so we would think that she would know the legal things to do in order, but apparently she doesn't.
Well, I must, sir, repeat the question, and I understand it, and I think you've certainly been upfront and honest, because clearly there was never any reflection about who had custodial control and possession of all of this evidence that had been garnered by the NAACP, Black Lives Matter. Of course, Black Lives Matter is a non-entity. They have really no standing because they really don't have any structure. But the NAACP has a lot of structure. I just hope that they've got the necessary insurance and bonding. I've been texted a number of messages, Mr. Allen, as I think you're being. Mr. Nelson, there was another fundraiser in regards to the Jamar Clark tragedy at the Capri Theater. It was for Jamar, quote-unquote, Clark, and it was to raise money for his headstone. Now, I'm puzzled because on this program just last week, we had an individual who clearly enunciated the fact that a group of individuals not affiliated with the NAACP had gone ahead and finally bought a headstone for the deceased.
Right. That's right.
Is there any information that you have about what has happened to all this money that has been raised in the name of Jamar Clark?
You know, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, but no transparent records of what's any monies that has been raised in the name of the Jamar Clark fund. I wish they would quit raising monies in the name of this young man. Again, as you just stated, there were people, and some of our NAACP members was a part of it, that raised the money for his headstone. He now has a headstone, and not because of the NAACP or not because of Black Lives Matters or any other organization. So what is money being raised for? We know that the family says that $100,000 was raised in their name and that they didn't receive any monies. I personally know a relative, a first cousin, that says they didn't receive any monies. He has yet now, he does not have a cell phone to be in touch with, and he has since lost his apartment. So what is their money is being raised in this young man's name for, and they aren't receiving it? I don't understand that.
Well, I think a gentleman by the name of Mel Reeves could help answer some of that. He has apparently been identified as with the group at the Capri Theater. But there are a lot of things being circulated and et cetera. But I do know that folks have been going around to saying we want to raise money for his headstone, when in fact the headstone was paid for by a group headed by the Reverend Jerry McAfee, Bishop Howell, and the Reverend Dr. Bishop Howell, and the Reverend Billy Russell, president of the Black Baptist Convention, and Alicia Clemens, a activist here in the community and a member of the NAACP, and I understand, I think, also her brother, raised the $1,300. How many more times will the community be expected to give an offering to acquire a headstone that's already been acquired?
Amen.
Yeah, if I can interject.
Yes, sir, my colleague, Ms. Allen, go right ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at this thing, you know, and how these crises are created with this bad data that these folks are using. And no one's listening. The Star Tribune even went as far as to publish an article saying that this event on the other day was to raise money for his headstone. But if you really need, it's unfortunate that the young man was shot by the police, but is Jamar Clark really the poster child for justice?
Right.
For law enforcement, for police brutality, or for shooting in general? I mean, I would think that maybe one of the little kids shot in North Minneapolis would be the poster child for justice, you know. And
well,
so,
let me say on that
said,
point, Mr. Allen and Mr. Nelson, because you raise an issue in which, in fact, I'm aware that K.G. Wilson, a longtime activist, is quite upset along with others. You know, last week, a week ago today, in the first series of hearings on the reappointment of Chief Dene Harto, and there was no official NAACP concerned expressed about that reappointment, which is kind of interesting. Again, a member of the Black Lives Matter group and another a group that he had just formed, and et cetera, actually insulted and spoke ill of the mother of the deceased, Terrell Mays, shot and killed, 3-year-old baby shot and killed in this city a couple years ago. I just could not understand. I was sitting there in shock at the hearing last Wednesday when this gentleman chose, in some attempt to attack Chief Dene Harto, spoke very ill of this mother. And I know there's been some social media back and forth, and it has been ugly. This comes on the heels of the attack on the black ministers and et cetera. I mean, who do we think? Let's bring us all three here. Who do we really think put together the so-called master plan for what has become a disastrous lawsuit? Because I would have also thought that given we're so much about black lives and black success matters, that they would have found some young black lawyers to be involved in the litigation.
Oops.
I noticed that there wasn't. In fact, I didn't see anybody black but the branch president, though there were some African Americans in the audience. I'm just trying to get a feel on what the heck is going on, because I have to tell you, gentlemen,
that's messed up, G.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, G, it is. I have to just ask the question, I mean, who is driving the agenda as it pertains to some of these issues? I really have a bad feeling that black folk ain't in control. And we also must remember the attack on a reverend just a couple days ago. And I feel so bad because she suffered. Mary Flowers Pratt, a beloved minister who had, by the way, gentlemen, had suffered a heart attack after this program last week, a day later. She's improving. Of course, our prayers are out to her and others. Our prayers are out to Marsha Mays, based on how she came under attack and et cetera. Somebody seems to be driving. Of course, we're going to come under criticism for raising the issue and talking about it, but that's what media is all about. But who is it that's really the white hand, if you will, with some of the stuff that's going on?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, and I have no answers. And, you know, I would think we absolutely know that Madam President has to be behind some of it. And I think Don a moment ago raised the question that exactly it's unfortunate that he lost his life, but when we, with the other multiple murders we've had since, is he the ideal poster child for what's going on when it comes to homicides? Again, as you said, how Marsha Mays has been attacked by Mel Reeves and disrespected when this young lady has lost a baby innocently at home around the holiday times. And there's been no marches and things of that nature, or a real true acknowledgement of her child losing his life. And so that saddens me. And so she gets ignored, why Madam President continues to want the limelight from this Jamar Clark death. That's unfortunate. That's got to be stopped.
All right. Any questions on your end, Mr. Allen, Mr. Nelson,
no,
before we let him go?
I'm glad he called in. I heard him this morning on another radio station trying to bash my candidate, but I got something for him later. But that's okay. That's okay. I'm concerned, Mr. Edwards. Then again, I'm going to be really honest with both of you guys. I'm concerned, but then again, I'm not concerned. Because, you know, if these people are going to work surreptitiously behind the scenes and not tell people what's going on and to expect us to I don't follow blind leaders. Never have, never will.
That's right.
And so with that said, you know, something has to click. And we have a phone call. Another caller.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Click it in.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, greetings.
Yes.
This is Mr. M.
Jim, how you doing,
hey,
sir?
Good. Doing very, very good. Very good. And, you know, I just continue. Obviously, I'm an avid listener of the program and also try to contribute, you know, when I have, even on location at times when I get the opportunity to, and I appreciate you taking my call. But, you know, the situation we're in here in the Twin Cities, it kind of reminds me of the old Billy Preston song, "Will It Go Round in Circles?" Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? I mean, it is really... And it reminds me of another thing that my father would say. This is a Barnum and Bailey situation.
Yes, it is.
A couple of things I wanted to talk about. One, I saw something in the paper the other day about a gentleman by the name of Don Samuels heading up some type of micro grants type program. It looks like it's supposed to be some type of stimulant, at least a business stimulant or seed money or seed something for the black community to access small business funds in the community. Have you gentlemen have any comment on that, or do you know anything about that?
I saw the same article actually on the business page of the Star Tribune. I know Mr. Samuels. I was not aware that he was holding a position with that particular nonprofit. I understand had a salary of $90,000 a year. We all know that his wife is very much involved in a very well endowed nonprofit program, NONS, at about $23 million. I was not aware, if you will, until the Star Tribune, you know, broke the story. At some point, maybe somebody can step up and indicate the many things and loans that they have given. At this time, everything seems to be somewhat vague, other than it's in place and a lot of money is supposed to be flowing into the community. Once again, I'm just not sure who is being paid to. When I look out here in these streets and what I see of our people, I'm just trying to figure out who it is that's getting all this money.
Well, I am too. You know, I saw this and it looked like a promising type of a situation, but, you know, it kind of comes in the paper with all this big fanfare, but, you know, there's no way to, you know, there's no information on how you access these funds, who you contact. what the rules are, what you have to do to, you know, put in a proposal? Is there any way of contacting this organization? I mean, there was no contact information. There was nothing. Just this big thing kind of touting, you know, the gentleman as a CEO. So, but I guess I'm hopeful that, you know, maybe there is something there that I'm not seeing. So, I mean,
I think what we probably need to do is have some people call Neil St. Anthony, the writer involved with that article, who writes extensively for the business page. I think maybe, you know, Mr. St. Anthony should give us a little bit more information, help our people out. I hear a lot of conversations going on from folks who are talking in terms that they are business starved, if you will, and are looking for opportunity and et cetera. And so I'm hoping that that this will be forthcoming, that kind of information, you know. Yeah. Somebody has just texted me, gentlemen, and said that we need to encourage our people to call Louis King of the powerful OIC, nonprofit organization. Who is found thousands of jobs for African Americans, according to Star Tribune. Yes, sir. Yeah, that, they, my cell is just going off the hook, gentlemen, with these calls coming in, questions that they are saying that we're maybe being a little laxed in answering. That's why I'm glad that people like Mr. Nelson and him call in, feel comfortable in calling in, and we can get this out on the air, as we did with Dr. Porter earlier in the program this evening. Because on one hand, I mean, it just looks like there's excellent prosperity in our community, but then when you look at the statistics, see, I'm like him, and yourself, Mr. Allen. I believe that you got to look at the statistics, the data, and et cetera. In fact, you know, we're still reeling from the Bureau of Census, who came in with that study which blew the lid off everything in this town and in this state. But I can't figure out the prosperity that I hear being talked about and people honoring and giving each other awards and et cetera. And then these statistics and this data comes out. And as a young lady said at a meeting the other day, we're at the bottom of the totem pole, no matter what. I mean, we're last in employment, we're last in education, we're first in incarceration. You know, we're last in economic development and et cetera. So I at some point, gentlemen, maybe have grown old, because I've also, you know, heard the statement that old African Americans, elders, don't have anything to bring to the table. And so maybe in our quote unquote leisure moment, if you will, we miss something. I don't know, gentlemen. Help me out here. Help me out.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, how all these supposed, these micro grants, these jobs that Mr. King purports to have. I mean, how are these things being accessed? I mean, how do you access the jobs? I mean, what do you have to do to get a micro grant? I mean, this is the kind of information that I think we need. Not that the things are there and these people are doing this, they're doing all that. Well, great. How about information on how we access them? How can we get this word out so that people can get in there and, or even talk to some of the people who have received some, so that they can get
kind
of
testimonial? Well, now let me say this, Jim and Mr. Allen, that is a key component that you just mentioned. You know, how can we find these people and they can kind of help others on what it is that one needs to do to gain access and to begin to enjoy some of the profits of a society. That's what I'm looking for. You know, every time I'm riding up and down the streets in our beloved city, not just the colored community, but our city, I keep looking for the new black businesses. And I even go into the suburbs, you know, and I ask people the question, are there any new black businesses that you can refer me to? I'd, you know, maybe as a journalist, like to go out and interview and et cetera. And I'm just not, gentlemen, I'm just not finding it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I have to beg to differ with you on that, you know, Mr.
Okay,
Edwards,
all right.
I happened to read in the Star Tribune about a young lady that had a shoe sign stand. And
Morning's edition of the paper. In fact, she's been at it for 25 years.
25 years. I mean, I think her perseverance at that, says something. I mean,
IDS Tower. Yes, yes.
Tower.
God bless her. 25 years she's been shining shoes. Yes. Nothing wrong with that. I can well remember when, white folks used to refer to us as the shoe shine boys and girls. But you're kind of hinting something there, Em. Are you saying that with no disrespect intended to her, 25 years
of
her life?
Of course not. Of course not. She's a hardworking
young
lady.
But you're
saying
that
take care of her family.
Good old Star and Tribune should have been able to find some folks. Well, maybe Don, like Dr. Childs.
yeah.
Who has been very much involved in trying to facilitate and provide, mm-hmm. if you will. Dr. Childs, very much involved in the high technology industry.
And has been for years.
Yes. Maybe we're just not in lockstep and have grown slow, you know what I mean? I think both you and I, Em, are certainly a tad older than Mr. Allen, but Mr. Allen moves about and et cetera. I bet you we've just been missing a lot of stuff, right?
Well, I think we're kind of the images that we're presented with, are meant to kind of set a stage for what we're about.
Okay.
We don't see enough of the real positive images. We don't get the type of information that's going to steer us to more positive things. We continue to hear about, the school board and all these people making $150,000, $200,000 a year, and they can't even find a superintendent. They find somebody, and then all of a sudden they haven't even done any background checks on the person.
Right.
We continue to be put in this game of what I call almost like as a child, a pin the tail on the donkey. They blindfold us, turn us around in a circle, and expect us to find our way. We continue to fall into this same type of pattern. And until somebody, opens up the door, turns the light on it, and says, let's take a every step we make, at least let it be positive.
Okay.
At least let it be forward. Every step we take, at least let it be forward. Until we resolve to do that and to hold our politicians, we have votes. We put these people in office.
Yes.
They can be voted out.
Yeah.
And so we.
Let me ask you this question while we have you, Em, and we certainly, Mr. Allen, we have another 30 minutes of prime time. We were early on into our reflections and discussions trying to get an understanding about the lawsuit by the NAACP and the Civil Liberties Union, if you will, ACLU. That lawsuit has become moot, and so I just want to throw this at you. You've been around, you are aware of government and et cetera. So we can now expect that the NAACP and the American Civil Liberties Union will restructure their lawsuit or withdraw it and file another one in which they will demand that they will have to shift it over to Hennepin County because a judge in another county is not going to deal with a situation of an elected county official, particularly a prosecutor. So should we expect that the NAACP and the Civil Liberties Union will demand and file suit against County Attorney Mike Freeman, demanding that he release all information?
Well, what they're going to continue to do is to spin around in a circle as to who has the responsibility to release this information. Now it's the BCA. Okay, now is it Mike Freeman? Is it the police chief? Is it, so
no, let me just correct, though. Let me just, as a...
Please do. Please enlighten
me. As a person who's long been involved, the sole responsibility now for stewardship, if you will, is the county attorney. The BCA is technically out of the ball game. The FBI is not, though, by the way. That's one of the reasons that there was no action filed in the federal court because, you have to get permission to file lawsuits against the federal government. So right now, let's just be clear on this and just get your thoughts. The responsibility, the judiciary responsibility for an action and a review of the death of Jabbar Clark now rests with the powerful county attorney for Hennepin County, Mike Freeman.
He controls all things.
And
I believe every word that you're saying. But when you read these accounts in the paper, you know, the governor chimes in. He's seen the tape, and there's nothing there. You know, they continue to refer back to the BCA. They continue to refer back to the police department. They continue to refer back to the newspaper, who claims that they've asked for the tapes. And so to get the consensus, and I'm sure you know what you're talking about, Mr. Edwards, because you have watchdogged this thing from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Even prior to this particular sad incident, you know, you have watched out. So, I mean, your knowledge, I mean, is untrumpable. But, I mean, what I see is they just continue to throw all these other issues swirling around. And so the public, I mean, I wish it wasn't clear. They'd come out and say, well, it's Mike Freeman's responsibility, so let's go to Mike Freeman and demand that he do this.
Okay.
But the information continues, you know, they continue. You read the papers, the BCA, it's the governor, it's the police chief, it's the union, it's, you know, and that's kind of the tactic that's used is to, you know, to push it. Oh yeah, this isn't you have to call this number. You have to call that number. You have to call it continue, you know, they continue to put us in the shell game where you can't pin this thing down.
Well, sir,
I
just have to say to you and Mr. Allen, and I just want to kind of, because Don and I, you know, really hammered it in the first 45, 50 minutes and et cetera. The matter is now in the hands of the county attorney as it pertains to the state. Now, we said this before. In fact, in tomorrow morning's edition, it's very interesting that the reporter, David Chinnan, who had been positioned to have the information leaked to him, made an interesting observation, kind of tongue-in-cheek, that the U.S. Attorney's Office indicated no comment. And then later on, in a rewritten supplement in the article, indicated that their investigation was still going on. Now, gentlemen, that is going to create a problem. You're right about that. So I'm expecting that the Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP, under extreme able leadership, I assume, will ask for permission to sue the Department of Justice. Gentlemen, can we look forward to that?
Well, I guess I have one other question. I have one other question. If this is the responsibility of Chief County Attorney Mr. Mike Freeman, well, what's stopping him from releasing it?
Oh, you're talking about the video?
The video.
He would be... The attorneys for the police officers and the attorneys for the Federation and maybe even some others would file
That's
immediately.
That's my point. That's
yeah.
my point.
And it would
See?
Be blocked. It would be blocked.
See, this is my point.
It would be blocked because it is paramount to the issue of due process. You know, no matter how we may want to talk and et cetera, everyone has a right to due process, and you, him, have really hit on an interesting legal point that, in my estimation, the powers to be downtown have already analyzed it and are sitting back smiling. But I'd like to have the American Civil Liberties Union and the NAACP's attorneys. It's clear to me that the NAACP here in Minneapolis made a decision that the NAACP Legal Defense Fund wasn't worthy of handling something like this, okay? But you raise a heck of a point. In fact, our phone lines are open. Maybe we've got some folk out there that normally like to be critical and et cetera. Maybe they can deal with the issue of can we look forward to a suit being filed in the federal court demanding that the U.S. Attorney, Andy Lugar, be required also to extract from the FBI, who is the investigative arm and reports to the Department of Justice, that they be required to release the tape or the videos and et cetera. Gentlemen, I think that that would be rather interesting, and I think we could look forward to a titanic battle, constitutional battle. Don't you think so?
But again,
wouldn't this be something to be able to teach in your law class? Oops.
But again, it has to come down to the adjudicator making that positive decision. I mean, I watched a football game Sunday, okay? I saw a man early in the game catch a pass. I saw and they have a review system in the NFL where they have a guy in New York.
No, more than a guy. They have seven or eight of them.
They have seven or eight guys. But they also have an experienced guy that's part of the broadcast crew, an experienced referee that actually kind of chimes in before this happens. The experienced
He was an
referee,
African-American, Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm.
The experienced referee said, that's a catch. The man caught the ball. If I was in that game, he's an experienced referee. It was overturned, okay?
Yes, it was.
It was overturned, okay?
And that was
we saw the man catch the ball. The ref saw the man catch the ball. The
10 or 12 people in the NFL control center in New Jersey saw him catch the ball, but the politics wasn't right. Oops.
And turned it down. So, I mean, this is, you know, I say that to say, you know, this is what we're working with.
All right. Ian, want to thank you again. Keep your eye on the situation and whatever conversations you're engaged in within our community, et cetera. Let's hear from and please keep this in mind that came from, people that aren't up to speed on these kinds of things. Who has the control and the custodial authority and power for all of those interviews and videos that we were all told about on the morning of the 15th of November and the 16th and 17th and 18th. M, keep that in the back of your mind, and maybe next week you can re-engage that question because, you know, we should have all kinds of statements by the NAACP, the Civil Liberties Union, Black Lives Matter, and et cetera, that they are prepared to release the tapes and videos and evidence that they have. Oops.
Well, I hopefully next week. I mean, what we plan to do, gentlemen, is continue the dialogue, continue
Absolutely.
The pressure, continue the
yeah.
pressure, because as the wise man said, pressure can bust a water pipe.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you calling.
Thank
in.
You.
All right, Mr. Allen. Do we have anybody? We've been talking for a long time. We probably have some people. But the phone line is open. We still have, oh, my God, we have 20 minutes. Our phone lines are open. We're trying to determine what the next course of action will be in the matter of the death of Jamar Clark at the hands of Minneapolis police officers on the 15th day of November. The county attorney, the top prosecutor in this county, Hennepin County, has the case. The report was turned over to him late last night by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, if you will. And so he is saying in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper and online right now as we speak that he expects that he will, you know, be able to present this to a grand jury the last couple of days of March, maybe the first week of April. Mr. Allen, what's your thinking on that?
Well, I think that we're just going to have to sit back here and figure out what the next crisis is going to be created for these people come out in front of the cameras again with another press conference. And I do think that, you know, according to the newspaper article, that nothing can be released, you know, especially if they're going to indict someone or do something in that nature. But if they don't, it becomes public record. So they're just going to have to wait. I don't care how much hooping and hollering they do. Nothing's going to happen until Mr. Freeman is done doing his paperwork, period.
But, Mr. Allen, would you not agree with Mr. Edwards from the left that it is a fair question now to be asked in that the at least one of the two entities, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, has completed their charge and responsibility, turns it over to the chief prosecutor. Don't you think it's appropriate now to ask who had custodial control of all of those videos and those statements and et cetera that we heard the leadership of our civil rights organization, now joined by the powerful organization, the Civil Liberties Union? Don't you think it's now time for them to come on up and lay that evidence out? Help out the county attorney?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think they should just come out with it, you know, and drop it like it's hot and say that, okay, these are the videos we have, these are the statements we have, because, you know, a lot of people said they were out there taking statements, but we have none to surface. And
not at this point. And I know that David Chenin, the lead reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who we know is he and his associates are listening in, we know that they've been running around trying to find witnesses and et cetera. Someone approached me. I said, well, you know, you need to go talk to the people that have been talking and running their mouths. I mean, they say that they have the empirical evidence and et cetera, and it's now time for them to bring their videos and their witness statements and et cetera forward, if you will. As I said in my column on the 14th of February, and I may be one of the few people, Mr. Allen, and I want to be careful about being self-serving, but facts are facts. I may be one of the few people that sat in an interview with a witness who stepped up and told what it was that they saw in the very moments that Mr. Clark died. And I've been trying to get somebody to at least, you know, question me, challenge me, or et cetera, even though I've indicated that the way that I'm going to approach it is that I'm prepared to give my testimony before a federal grand jury on what it is that I know was done to destroy a key witness in the murder of or in the death of Jamar mm-hmm. Clark. And I just can't get any bite, Mr. Allen. Maybe I'm using the wrong bait. Phone lines open, man. Give them the number. We got about 15
sure
minutes.
Yes, we sure do. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. The lines are wide open. And Mr. Edwards, also, we just received some information from Mr. Lewis Porter, who was on with us at the top of the hour as I go to my text messages. He just wanted to let everybody know that the address for Saturday's forum is 1015 North 4th Street, downtown Minneapolis, right off downtown Minneapolis. And the number you can call to RSVP for that Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage Police Community Relations Forum, the RSVP telephone number is 651-757-1750. Again, that RSVP number is 651-757-1750.
Now, where is this? You say North 4th Street. Mr. Allen, this is, you say it on the edge of downtown? Because I thought initially it was in the Heritage Village complex,
You know what? I'm going to do it right now, Mr. Edwards. I'll tell you exactly where it is because I was confused because I thought this was the building where the contractors held their
Yes, used to hold their meetings. That's what I thought also, but we obviously were wrong.
Let me see. Street. I'm putting it into the computer screen right now so I can get a visual of
mm-hmm.
exactly where this place is, and I can tell people. I think it is across the bridge. Here we go. And street view. Let's get a street view.
Okay.
The senior center is back there where the voting polls are in Heritage Park.
Okay.
If you go back to, it's a huge building. It's wood. It's brick. It has steps and really nicely manicured in the summertime. And it's the senior center. It's not that main center off Olson Highway. It's further back. By the
right, going up, back up the hill towards 7th Street.
Yes, and it's 1015 North. Let me see where else. Let me just look around here. I can look around here, and I mean, this technology is just unbelievable, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
I'm like doing a full 360. Yeah, so if you drive in, what you'll do is, you know, across, like, say you're going west on Highway 55.
Yes, sir.
Right there before when you get to Heritage Park, you take a right, and you
yes.
straight back. You'll pass like a big vacant metal kind of area, a lot fences and a little lake in the middle, and the senior center sits on the very end. It's like the most detailed building, really nice building that you'll see back there.
Okay, gotcha. And that would be you'd be going in a northerly direction. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Hey. All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Of course, my associate, Mr. Allen, is not a sports fan whatsoever.
Yeah,
but, Mr. Allen, what did you think about the follow-up to the Super Bowl?
I don't even know what follow-up. I didn't even know who won the Super Bowl, Mr. Edwards. Okay, I had to call you and ask
The Denver Broncos. But people were upset with the young African-American quarterback because they say he didn't act the right way. He seemed like he was a sore loser. I thought that that's, in America, that's how we judged our professional and even amateur athletes, that we want them to rail and et cetera when they lose, right? But they didn't like this young African-American's disposition. They didn't like the fact that he wasn't friendly to the majority media, you know. Is that a problem in America?
You know, I just think that they need to get over that. You know, the guy was his first time and at the Super Bowl. Yeah, he made it there. Okay, I think that's more important than anything. Okay, I'm not a big sports fan, never have been. And, I mean, it's good to see, you know, finally, you know, these African-American quarterbacks, these black American quarterbacks get to the point of even being in a Super Bowl. I remember back when my Uncle Nate, who just passed away, we're having his funeral actually this Friday.
My condolences, by the way. I saw his obituary in the Spokesman Recorder.
Mm-hmm.
My condolences to your entire family and to Nate's family. I knew him well. We worked together way back in the day in putting together the black contractors in those days and OIC. But
yeah,
go ahead. I cut you off there.
Yeah, and so, but anyway, yeah, he used to take us out to the Met Stadium when it was cold in the wintertime. We used to bring our sleeping bags and blankets and used to freeze sitting in them little benches.
The
little
bleachers
raggedy
at the end zone. In fact, it would be the north end zone at the old Met. Yeah.
There was a crew of us,
about 35 of us, that got our tickets through the Nakarima and the very lovely Miss Nebbles, Juanita Nebbles, coordinated that. And there were a number of us, about 35 of us. We sit out in there and et cetera. By the way, let me say this, I just got received a text. Also, our condolences to the family of Ozzie Sonny Martin.
Oh, no.
Long time resident of the city of Minneapolis, grew up on South Minneapolis. Metro bus driver for many years, oftentimes was the man at the door as you came into the Elkson, et cetera. Very popular brother who passed quietly from this life early Monday morning after a long battle with cancer. And so my personal condolences out to his wife, Joyce. His services will be 11, if I'm not mistaken, 11 o'clock on Friday at Shiloh International Ministry. So Ozzie Sonny Martin passed from this life on Monday morning.
Wow. Yeah, I remember Ozzie well. He used to work out there where I worked at out in Plymouth, and the nicest guy you ever want to meet.
Yes,
you know,
he was.
Just cool.
Yes,
unbelievable.
Absolutely. By the way, are we going to get a superintendent of schools anytime soon, Don? Kind of moving around different places. Any calls out there? Anyone wants to question us on the investigation, et cetera? But, are we going to get a superintendent anytime soon or what?
I'm thinking about applying.
Okay.
Because we really need a superintendent. I just hope that, you know, they figure this all out, because that whole board just is in up right now. I know Don Samuels has his focus somewhere, and you're not doing anything for the students. Because the other day I decided that there is no achievement gap. It's a change. It's a resisting the change of culture, because, these books and this curriculum and this stuff going on wasn't really made for African-American children, Mr. Edwards. It never was. And if we want to really go back in history, and since we're coming up on February 12th, which is the Abe Lincoln's birthday, we know that, you know, one of the reasons Abe Lincoln was shot is because he's going to teach the slaves to read and write. Okay? And that's one of my theories. And so with him out of the way, it was never going to happen. So now we have a situation where these books
that our African-American children, our Native American children, our Asian children, we don't graduate from high school or college unless we understand Shakespeare or some other European author. That has nothing to do with our cultural competence. So getting back to the Minneapolis Public School Board, you know, what are they going to do? When are they going to figure this out? You know, you're sitting on the outside. The private sector needs to be get involved. I just want to tell you this real quickly here, Mr. Edwards. I told you that, you know, I'm a substitute in a lot of these schools here in the city.
Uh-huh.
And I always go in wearing a suit and tie, like I work downtown in corporate America, like I did for many years. And the kids just look at you. They look at you. They look at you, and they try to figure out. And the other day I was over in St. Paul at a school. A little black boy came up to me and says, are you the president of the United States?
Uh-huh.
And I just looked at him. And I said, well, I'm a little bit better looking. He goes, no, you're not. And I left it at that. But walking away from that, it was funny. It was very funny because, obviously, I looked nothing like the president of the United States. And then I said, looked in the mirror when I went to the bathroom. Oh, wow, I have a suit and tie on, and the only other person this kid could correlate it with was the president of the United States. So why isn't the private sector in these schools? Why? Where's the lawyers, the doctors, the accountants, the business people? I mean, we have chapters of sororities and fraternities up here of professionals that are not, these students are not seeing, especially these black boys. Like today I was at a school and all this dude wanted to do was rap all day.
Yeah.
He wanted to kick chairs and rap. And I'm like, dude, you can't do that in this class. We got to do the math, the English, the reading, everything. And I mean, it's ridiculous. And so, again, when you look at the Minneapolis Public Schools, I mean, there's some of us out here that has this figured out. There's a lot of people inside the Minneapolis Public Schools that have not figured this out. And this is not showbiz. This is education. And once they start treating it like education, Mr. Edwards, I think we'd be a lot better off.
Well, but Mr. Edwards, I mean, from the left, you know, there has been so much money poured in all across the country for the last 20 years. And I cut it off at that particular time, as it's been for as long as I can remember, to quote-unquote enhance and improve the intellect of the sons and daughters of the Negro, quote-unquote, of the African, quote-unquote. You never can get any accountability, though. When you start asking the question about, you know, how was the money and everything really spent, you can't get a response. You can't get an audit. But would you not agree, Mr. Allen, as an educator, that there are really no consequences for the people that control the educational destiny of children of color? There are no consequences if they fail. The only one that fails are the victims, are the children, are
children.
A particular group and race of people, Native Americans, Hispanic, Latino, African Americans. See, there are no consequences. You know, let's say I'm a principal at a school, and the rate of success and proficiency and et cetera of my colored students, black students, is maybe, you know, 14-15%. I mean, you know, I'm really not concerned about my job security. I mean, I'm talking about if I'm white. So is there something that needs to happen? Is it legislation or things like, maybe this is something we could discuss with Dr. Porter. Is there
legislation
that needs to be put in place that sets not only a standard but consequences for continuing to promote the failure of a specific group of people in a society?
Yeah. I mean, I think there needs to be something put in. But I'm going to tell you, Mr. Edwards, a lot of these teachers work really hard. It's fortunate and unfortunate that we have the majority white female teachers in the school systems of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Very handful. I mean, probably about 6 black men, maybe. And some of them are...
That's what I'm hearing. Let me say this also, because I know that we would get slammed with it. Also, when are we going to be able to take up the issue of holding our parents also responsible for the continued failure and the pattern and practice? Because that's something, you know, we stay away from, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But, Mr. Edwards, you know, the state says that the parent is responsible for their child's education. Okay, the state spends, if I'm not mistaken, over 2/3 of its budget on education. Money is not the issue, okay? The money is there. It's what they're doing with the money. Like you just said, where's the accountability when you need an audit or what's going on? Why are these kids getting 504 plans and ISPs, you know, individual learning plan, and,
yes.
and things like that that maybe they don't need? And bad behavior. Bad behavior is sometimes mistaken that these people have these children have a learning disability when in fact that these children are not challenged. If you have a bored child in the classroom, oh my God, the behavior that comes out of that bored child is crazy. And
okay.
as a teacher, you have to recognize that and adjust your agenda to that child in the classroom with 17 or 20 other students.
Now, let me ask you this question then, Don, based on that. How much of that, because you're in the classroom, how much of that mm-hmm. is now attributed to both the mental and physical disposition of the child? And unfortunately, when I talk about both of them, I have to talk in terms of the history of drugs in Black America.
Well, the history of drugs, the distraction, poverty, you don't know where these children are coming from, okay? You don't know what happened, if they even – we know they get breakfast when they get to school, but you don't know what
yeah.
they ate the night before. You don't know if their mom and dad got home at 3 in the morning and they play Nintendo or whatever they play nowadays, Xbox, till 3 in the morning. I mean, there's a whole set of variables and derivatives that you have to basically guess at as a teacher in the classroom because you don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I got into a situation the other day where I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to get mad and angry at any of these kids. I'm just going to excel the kids that are bored. I had a couple guys, they were so bored, Mr. Edwards. They were brilliant. And one of the teachers came to me, those two are going to be a problem. One of the white teachers. I said, what do you mean they're going to be a problem? So I get in the room. And you know, Mr. Edwards, I don't know anything about football or sports, period. Okay?
Yeah, I know that.
Okay? These dudes knew probably 30 or 40 different players' names, their positions, their stats. And I says, hey, you guys want to write something. I know you don't want to do this writing that we were assigned. Why don't you guys write about contact sports for boys 14-plus? Talk about football. Is it good or is it bad? Man, mm-hmm. them guys loved that. They came back with 4 or 5 page handwritten papers talking about why contact sports is okay from 14 and above and why it provides a solid foundation of discipline. I mean, them words they were using was exquisite.
Okay.
And all they needed to do to speak on their level, to do what they want, to let their creative juice. I had no problem out of them. Matter of fact, I'm going back there tomorrow. So, it was a great time. But, yeah, the teachers, they don't have the concentration of the time and we got about 2 minutes and 45 seconds left.
I got you. I'm marking.
And so with that said, you know, there's trouble in the classroom. There's trouble in the administration. There's trouble with these consultants for the most part. And I'm not racist at all. And if I was, I would hate everybody equally. But there's trouble with the white female consultants running around the schools and the psychologists telling that this is what we need for the students. This Black student needs this. You know, and if they solve the problem, they would have to solve the problem inside the family, inside the household. And mom
right.
and dad need a job. Mom and dad need economic stability. Mom and dad need to have the things they need to have where they can work and be productive so that kid can see what working and being productive is about.
In other words,
right,
generate a sense of pride both with the parents and with the child.
Exactly.
The parents feel good about
exactly.
the child. The child feels good about their parents. Yeah. All right, Mr. Allen, you know, interesting. We'll be taking a look at the lawsuit, and I guess we're getting ready to wrap it. Man, let our main man, Mr. Allen, James Brown, take us home.
Okay, I got to look for James Brown because I went. Here we go. Here
no,
I found
you,
him.
You know,
you
never misplaced
a
James Brown.
Take two eyes to make a pass.